We are here to drink some beer.
Yes, we are. I braved the snow.
Is it snowing?
A little bit. It was snowing where I was, not snowing here.
Gotcha.
But
speaking of snow, craziest thing. You might have seen it on the news. Was it Wednesday night? I think it was Wednesday. The weather was just right. That the steam coming off the Shippensburg nuclear facility, you know, they didn't let go of any radioactive steam, but just the stuff out of the cooling towers. The weather was just right that caused a 4-mile-wide, 40-mile-long band of snow. So I was driving home from work, and I drove less than a quarter of a mile from completely clear roads to completely covered roads. And it was this ridiculous... I didn't know what it was when I was driving through it, but I mean, I remember in hindsight, I remember looking like at a traffic, like a street lamp, and it seemed like it was just stuck there. Like it wasn't falling at all. So it was like ridiculously fine snow and slippery snow. Like I was going up this just very minor hill and I almost didn't make it up it.
Wow.
And, it was only about 4 miles wide. I drove into it. I drove out of it. I thought it was just like a storm band or something like that. But, you know, it seemed unusual that there was no other snow around the storm band. And, you know, there's a picture on satellite, you know, it just shows right from the nuclear power plant for 40 miles, this band of snow, and it snowed like an inch. It messed up some people's commutes pretty badly, but
wow.
It was insane. I guess it only happens, you know, very rarely that the conditions are just right to turn all that steam and, you know, water vapor into snow.
That's all that's being pumped out of the nuclear power plant.
Yeah, I guess water vapor is more technically correct than steam, even though, you know, the local news call it steam. But they call everything steam. pre-show beer is just, I think we did this recently on the show. It's the Texas Red Amber Lager.
Which I think was, if I'm right, this was kind of, it was closer to a Vienna style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I had a thing happened with my family this week, which is kind of annoying, and I can't really talk about it because it's one of those things that happens, and it made my week kind of bad because of this conflict. I had a bad week. How about you?
My week was better. I'm trying to think what was notable about it. Notable things that there's one pretty notable thing that I can't talk about. A lot of things we can't talk about on the air. Mine was not family related. Mine was work related, but not appropriate to discuss, you know, to disclose that information to the public. So can't do that.
If you're buying Apple, it's a...
It's not that, and it's not the reverse of that. And I wouldn't have knowledge of any purchase until it was public anyway, so... Or maybe just before it was public.
I meant they're buying a crate of apples.
Oh, a crate of apple. Well, we do that on a regular basis, yes.
Apples, the fruit.
Oh, case of apples, yes, okay. It's out of season. They're hard to find. You would,
yeah, exactly. So that's why it's news.
Yeah. What else did I do this week? I'm trying to think. It was a busy, like a really busy week at work. Today I played in the snow with the kids and whatnot. That was fun. I'm tired of winter. 2-year-old. I've said this before, but 2-year-old in the house in Western Pennsylvania in the wintertime is not fun.
So that, yeah. Okay. I see that. That's why you're tired of winter. Yeah, because, I mean, in terms of winter, this is the first snow we've had. It's already January, you know, the end of January, and this is the first actual legitimate snow we've had.
Well, no, we had that one other. There was more snow at once last time, like right before Christmas or whatever it was. It was fall.
It wasn't winter, stay around, and it was like, yeah, I guess.
It was there for a few weeks. Now, that was maybe not down in the city, but here it was real snow.
Yeah, okay.
But it's the dark all the time. It's the too cold to play outside.
Yeah.
Max does not, makes Max cranky. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. And it makes mom and dad a little fidgety when Max is cranky all the time.
Yeah. Well, this is what we get for living on a planet with a 23 degree axial tilt and living in the northern hemisphere of that planet.
Yeah. I guess. You can always move south.
Yeah, you can move south. Move into the tropics. Get lots of sun.
Yeah. What else did I do this week? Anything? Watch a few more episodes of The Wire. I'm not six in yet, but it's starting to, you're starting to see people. You're starting to see some stuff develop, so that's cool. Well, maybe that was a little overboard, but I'm kind of excited. There's a new Joe Schmo show.
Yes, there is.
After like 10 years, they're doing Joe Schmo again. And the dude from Pittsburgh again. I guess Pittsburghers are full of gullible people or something.
Let me put it this way. One of the reasons why I stuck around Pittsburgh, as opposed to staying in D.C. or Cleveland where I was before, the people here are really nice and welcoming. And so, and that's the kind of guy you need for a Joe Schmo show. Yeah. The kind of guy who will just kind of roll with the punches and accept that crazy stuff is going on around him. And I guess this is what they do. And not really think, I'm being pugged. This is a put on.
Oh, you haven't watched it.
I watched the first two episodes when Lorenzo Lamas was on. He was very funny.
Yeah.
It surprised me how funny he was. And I know what happens in the fourth episode.
Okay. Yeah, I feel so bad for the actor who has to play the deaf girl.
I know. That's such a... Well, I mean, how amazing an improviser do you have to be? The thing is that the first Joe Schmo show, Kristen Wiig was in that one. That was the first introduction to her, and that she's gone on to do amazing things. You have to be a really good improviser to be able to do that sort of thing. To be on your game 24 hours a day and play a character who can't hear when you can hear, that's so hard. So,
you have to... How do you practice not being startled by startling things?
Yeah.
Startling sounds. I mean, she did overreact to the whole champagne cork popping thing. But how do you not flinch? Even when, even if you're ready for it.
Like a door slams or something. Mm-hmm. Or, last week when Allie walked in on us.
Yeah.
If I were pretending I was deaf and that just happened and...
Yeah, they've showed the previews all over the place, so it's not really a spoiler. She's doing these crazy handstand push-ups, and the Joe Schmo guy, Chase, says, "Wow, you're strong," and she turns her head and says, "Yeah." She said it in her deaf voice, but oops. And there's a couple things. I don't know. I think they might be editing it to make it a little more awkward than it really is in the situation. I mean, because there's two things the producers have to have up their sleeve. They have to have like two people, like the whole staff. If you see him catching on to something weird,
distract him.
Well, they probably have a short list of like five things. Use one of these five things and just go into it, right? And then what I hope they do is I hope that he calls out the deaf girl and she plays, "Oh, I'm not really deaf. I'm just doing this for," hopefully that's in the script, or hopefully if he calls her out, that's an easy out, right? I mean, it holds up with, make it seem like the whole thing's fake. It just seems like she's this diabolical reality show person.
There's that. There's also, she could go the route of, "I'm mostly deaf, but I can hear things." Something, because most people who are deaf can actually hear some very minor things, and you can see deaf people with hearing aids and stuff like that, and like, "Well, you're deaf, why do you have a hearing aid?" Well, they can actually hear very small things, but probably wouldn't be able to hear somebody saying, "Oh, you're really strong." Yeah. That's a little bit too much, but you can only stretch so far. But I think part of the reasons why the Joe Schmo show is a successful show, why it's a show that that you and I both enjoy and people enjoy watching, is because it's not just the reality parody. There's also the storyline of will he find out or not, and the side of that going on with it. Mm-hmm. So there's there's more at stake than just a straight parody of reality shows.
Yeah. But the parody part is brilliant too. The translator, you know, uh-huh. like at the eviction ceremony, he stands in the fountain, you know, like the fountain's dry, but he's standing in the fountain, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like, you gotta look in the background because they're not actually pulling out all the awesome absurdity. And that's part of the reason, you know, yeah, the eviction ceremony. May I enter you, Lady
yeah.
Justice?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's the funny stuff, but the part that makes it compelling and the part that makes you keep watching beyond the first episode, once you get, mm-hmm. okay, they're parodying this guy. Because they don't, the parody itself doesn't really go much beyond the surface.
Yeah.
They're parodying the general reality things, but it doesn't go into, like, I don't know if you watched the whole Sex House Onion thing, but that took a turn in a direction that nobody saw. And that was what was so brilliant about it, was that the first episode, it sort of looked like it was just sort of a shallow parody, and then it just kept going and going and going into this weird, like, Cronenberg thing. It was crazy.
This guy seems a lot sharper than the first. I don't remember. Like, I'm pretty sure I probably watched the second season. They did. This is only the third season of Joe yeah. Schmo. They did two in a row, and then they took, you know, 8 years off or whatever. And this guy is asking. He's digging. Like, when he was, it might have been the third episode, one you didn't see, but the overachieving Asian. You know, her story is she graduated med school at like 24, so he was walking her backwards, like, when did you do this, when did you do that, and she didn't have her backstory down that tight. So yeah, she stumbled through it. And again, I wonder if they're editing it. It's either one of two things. It's either you're immersed in this atmosphere and you can't imagine everyone's out to lie, you know, everyone's playing you, so you kind of, you don't pick up on the alerts that everyone's seeing on TV, you know. So, like, I mean, you came here, you don't think I've been playing you for the last 5 years, you know. And so there's that part of it. And
this is not a beer.
Exactly. And then, you know, I think they do edit it because they want people to tune in.
Of course,
is he gonna they edit it to make it look like a series of really yeah. close calls. You know, I think so. I think they might be making some of these things, closer than it really was.
Well, of course, that's how you ratchet up the story. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it was a bunch of no close calls, then that whole storyline of Willie figure out, if that's not there to compel you, then why are you watching?
The absurdity, but yeah, I mean, the two of them together really, you know, yeah, really,
like I said, the absurdity. It's the reality cliches are pretty shallow. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get beyond
the asshole character is not a big enough asshole, in my opinion.
No, the guy did the first asshole on the first Joe Church was so good at being an asshole.
Yeah, this guy, he, you saw the episode where he was almost recognized, right? It was like the first
yeah,
day, right?
Yeah,
he's from Super Troopers and a few other things. He's been on, actually, I went on IMDb, he's been on a lot, you know, he's a working actor, but he's mm-hmm. been on a lot of shows. So if this dude watches a lot of TV, you know, he could have recognized him. I think I recognize, well, I obviously recognize the host, you know, and, the widow, she looked familiar, you know, like if I saw her in real life, that I would think at the table, I would have been like, you look really familiar. And then she could have played, oh, a lot of people think I look like Jenna Fisher. And
yeah. But you see all this production going on and the last thing you think is, oh, this is there to fool me.
Right.
You know,
exactly. It's such an out there idea that you convince yourself that it has to be real.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how absurd they make it, though, because I mean that's part of the show too. Is like, how crazy can we get, and this guy still believe in it? You know, so yeah, I need a better. The asshole needs to turn it up a lot.
Maybe he will. Maybe they're just waiting.
I mean, there's a couple characters like, you know, there's the born again criminal, you know, and he hasn't played much of anything.
We got to he got through the interrogation scene, which was ridiculous, but it was kind of funny.
The you didn't see the one where they put everyone on a heart monitor? That was fun because they put everyone on a heart rate monitor, and if your heart rate went over 124 beats per minute, you were out. And then they had different stimuli and scary ones or erotic ones or whatnot. So they had the whole good theme there. And So they pull out this, you know, male stripper. And actually, not a hot male stripper. He had a little bit of flab, and he's oiling himself up. And both girl, like, both white girls, you know, they went out. And then, the gay guy, Lavernius, you know, the guy is playing gay. He got out, you know. And then they brought out a snake. And Chase, the Joe Schmo, really does not like snakes. And his heartbeat went up to, like, 122 beats per minute. And then he, like, the host is like, he turned on some kind of Jedi mind trick, and he turned it right back down. He really wants to win. But he almost, like, I don't know if they would have, like, you know, not cast him out or not. But he's like, he almost was out. And then the final one was they had this girl with fake boobs topless doing jumping jacks. And, and then, you know, everyone else's, you know, all the other heart rates were fake, right? You know, and only Chase's was real. But yeah, they pulled the snake out, and he, yeah, you could see it go up, come back down. It was a fun one. Yeah, Joe Schmo. I just love the whole playing someone like that, you know, that whole Truman Show thing.
So Sunday I went to see a Harmontown podcast. Dan Harmon is doing a national tour, and he was in Pittsburgh. I actually invited Jeff this when I was like, oh, you know what? It's going to be Sunday night. We, you know, day after the show, Jeff doesn't really follow Dan Harmon.
So how was it?
It was cool. It was very good. It was a fun time. And also it got really weird and emotional because his girlfriend was there and they were having a fight, and they brought all that to the stage and sort of worked it out. So there was this like weird kind of emotional component too. It made it a really intimate kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. How big was it? How many people?
I would say there's probably about, it's probably about 100 people.
Okay. Where was it at?
It was in the north side at one of these Carnegie places near the Penn Brewery. A little theater space.
I didn't know there was any theater space over
there. There is.
Interesting.
I didn't know either.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, people like Dan Harmon's work in Community, but only a tiny amount really care about, you know, to go see him. And a lot of people might think it's going to be this, you know, Community type, you know, dialogue. No, and, you know, from what you've told me, it's not what it, you
no, it's not that expect. At all. It's Dan Harmon's raging id is essentially what the show is. And it's his outlet in the same way that these pre and post shows are our outlet.
It's like, wait, I can make a living going all over the country just doing.
Well, he's not making a living doing this.
Well, sure, but
this is costing him money, but he's doing it for.
It's not even covering his expenses. Okay,
no, he's doing it for his ego. You know, he's doing it because, you know, a sort of an ego boost thing.
Gotcha, that's cool.
And, you know, he's honest about it, and yeah, he's very personable, very funny. They went to a bar afterwards, some shit bar that I went to briefly, but, you know, I couldn't drink anything. And it was just this piece of shit smoky bar. I was like, all right, I'm not going to bother to stay around.
All these great places, and you went here.
Yeah. They had good beer on tap. They had a good selection.
Just being smoky.
Just being smoky and small. And that, you know, what they also did have is they had a really good jukebox, because I'm not a music guy, right? But they're playing a bunch of songs that were pretty good that I never heard before. Yeah, this is not top 40 hits or stuff like that. This was also I had never heard before, and yet it was still good music.
I mean, just about all jukeboxes these days are broadband connected, right? So you can download.
Yeah, this wasn't you want. This wasn't like that.
Oh, no. Okay,
this was a more traditional sort of CD.
Okay,
one.
Interesting.
But it had a lot of different stuff that I'd never heard before.
That's cool. What else? I'm about done.
I had...
Unless you got something.
Kind of. In sort of the same Dan Harmon vein, I had a friend of mine send me a script. His first attempt at a script.
For what kind of format?
Movie.
Okay. Feature?
Yes. So I read it, and immediately I knew it was going to be awful because it was not formatted like a script.
Okay, how was it formatted?
It was people's dialogue and very brief description of a scene without any really descriptive stuff. I mean, if you've seen a script, there's a format.
I'm not sure I've ever read a script. I mean,
I have. I read a couple. I read a bunch.
Okay.
But the real problem was, well, I gave him a bunch of tips. I told him, look, this is terrible, but don't feel bad about that, because, you know, don't be discouraged by that, because it should be terrible. This is your first attempt to do anything like this. If you got it right on the first try, you'd be some sort of fucking Mozart. You're like everybody else. You have to get good at your craft. And so I said, okay, I can, here's the bits and pieces, four or five things that I actually liked in this script, in this 120 page thing that you did. There are four or five things I liked. Here's what you got wrong. And I went through a whole bunch of stuff. But mm-hmm. one of the things I really covered, especially, is story structure. And Dan Harmon's a big evangelist for this, and I learned a lot about mm-hmm. it from reading him. And I've talked about it on the show, but I've never really demonstrated all the steps, the monomyth Joseph Campbell story structure. And what I did is, with him, I wrote down these steps from the Joseph Campbell perspective, and I chose three movies to show where those steps are in those movies, so you can sort of see it through. And the movies I picked are what I think is one of the best movies ever made, Die Hard, structurally fantastic movie. One of the most Joseph Campbell movies ever made, The Matrix, A Hero's Journey, if there ever was one. And to mix up the genre a little bit, I chose a romantic comedy, I chose Groundhog Day. Okay. Three structural movies that mm-hmm. all fit the same structure.
Right.
But you can see, and here are the points. So the first point is you figure out who the person is. This is something that is desperately important, and it was not evident in the script at all. There was no, the
is hero, there a little bit of The Room going on in this script?
The hero had no character.
They jump right into the people and
you have to, the first thing you do is you establish your character. In mm-hmm. The Matrix, we meet Mr. Anderson. We meet Neo. He's this computer hacker who has, his job is, and he's a side job as a hacker, and he thinks something weird is going on with the world. In Die Hard, you have John McClane, this hard-nosed New York cop, but he's estranged from his wife, and he wants to make things right. Groundhog Day, Phil McAllister is a weatherman, he's a sarcastic guy, just sees the world and the rest of people through very cynical eyes, and no time for love, no time for those silly things. It's important to establish your character first. So the first part of the real story comes in once you establish your character, and that's the call to adventure. This is where the character has a need. So in Matrix, a phone arrives, you know, strangely to Neo, and it's Morpheus, and it tells him to, you know, follow his instruction or he's going to get caught by these agents who he sees. Mm-hmm. In Die Hard, John McClane he argues with his wife, and, you know, and then she leaves, and then all of a sudden he hears gunshots. In Groundhog Day, Phil has a demoralizing broadcast, and then learns that he may be stuck in this town of Punxsutawney because there's a blizzard that mm-hmm. may just keep him there. So that's step two. So step three is a very important part, is refusal of the call. The character initially refuses the call to adventure. So in The Matrix, Neo doesn't want to make the leap on the window. He goes out the window, but doesn't actually make the leap. And then he gets caught by the agents. In Die Hard, this is a little less played, but it's John McClane barely escapes and he gets an empty floor. And then instead of trying to do something about it, he tries to call the police. And tries to get the fire to go, to try to get them to take care of the situation. In Groundhog Day, Phil tries to escape anyway, and he gets blocked by the blizzard that he himself predicted would not fall. Step four, after the refusal of the call, in order to get the person on the right track, there is the part that Joseph Campbell calls supernatural aid. It doesn't have to be supernatural in the story, but the point is, it's something outside of the hero that causes him mm-hmm. to go along. Now, it can be supernatural. In The Matrix, it's these supernatural agents that show themselves and lock mm-hmm. his mouth, mm-hmm. right? In Die Hard, it's not supernatural. It's the bad guys stop the fire alarm. And and they're coming for him. In Groundhog Day, the supernatural aid is the day repeats, or it seems to. Something weird is happening. So this is when the story gets to the most important point. This is kind of the end of Act 1, beginning of Act 2, is this crossing of the first threshold. So after the strange experience, Neo in the Matrix decides to follow Morpheus in the car, where they remove the bug from Neo, and now Neo knows that something is wrong with the world. It's not just his in his imagination. In Die Hard, John McClane is forced to use all of his wits and cunning to defeat the two men who are sent after him. He's forced across that threshold into terrorist killer. In Groundhog Day, Phil realizes that the day has repeated, and it's repeating again. So once you cross the first threshold, the world opens up. New options are available to you. This is the belly of the whale. This is where Neo takes the red pill and sees the reality. In Die Hard, it's simplified. He kills the two men and decides that he can do this, and he leaves them a calling card. Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah.
In Groundhog Day, Phil finds he's stuck, so he starts to try to take advantage of it. He sleeps with the mousy girl, and he fucks around with people, and he does that sort of stuff. He pushes the guy into the puddle. He's realizing his possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So next you get to the Road of Trials. This is where your montage happens. In The Matrix, this is Neo learning his abilities, learning how to kung fu fight, learning the tricks to manipulating The Matrix a little bit, all that other stuff. In Die Hard, well, it's just John McClane continually killing terrorists. I don't know, there's other stories happening too in Die Hard, so that's... Mm-hmm. That's what I heard so great. But in Groundhog Day, this is Phil. Phil sees the girl that he wants. I forget what her name was. But he starts to eat away at her, starts to try to figure her out, try to figure out how to get in her pants. Okay, this all gets to the meeting with the goddess. So this is where the hero gets what he wants, or gets what he thinks he wants. In The Matrix, is very little. He meets the Oracle.
Right.
And the Oracle tells him essentially what he has to hear at the time. In Die Hard, McClane finally contacts the cops, and he contacts his guy, Pal, who's his helper on the outside. And in Groundhog Day, Phil almost gets her and then messes up. And... every time he tries afterwards, he fails. This is because he can't recreate the perfect moment through the mimicry that he happened before. This is your atonement with the Father. This is this is where things start to fall apart. In The Matrix, Morpheus gets captured. Morpheus being Neo's leader of sorts, his father figure. In Die Hard, McClane gets thwarted by the cops, who take over the job from Pal, and then he gets cornered and is heavily injured with glass in his feet. And Phil loses hope after his plans go awry. He tries to kill himself multiple times. This is the lowest point in the story. This is when your character is at their worst point, and they make the refusal of the return. Neo feels he can't save Morpheus, because he doesn't know what he can do. He was told he wasn't the one. In Die Hard, John McClane rests in the bathroom, removes the glass from his feet. He's in pain. He hears the story from Pal, reflects on the inevitability that he's going to die and all this stuff. In Groundhog Day, Phil is unable to kill himself, and he sort of resigns himself to his fate and just sort of lazily starts to learn everything he can just for the hell of it. This is where things turn around, though, in the rescue from without and crossing the return threshold. In The Matrix, Trinity makes Neo reconsider, and they plan an audacious rescue attempt, trying to out-agent the agents, essentially. trying to learn what he learned to overcome his adversary. In Die Hard, John realizes that something strange is going on and is informed that Hans has his wife. He has no choice now but to make the return. Forced across the threshold. Phil decides that he enjoyed being honest in Groundhog Day and decides to try to win his love, not with trickery, but by just making himself a better person and trying to save everybody he can. And then he tries to save the old man. He learns that no matter how hard he tries, he can't. And so he sort of resolves himself to live well instead of selfishly. This leads to, you cross the third threshold, you become the master of two worlds. This is where Neo realizes that his power is from within and without. Suddenly he sees the world of the Matrix as a toy. It's child's play. He can defeat his attackers with ease. John, down the two bullets, plays a desperate gambit, but he knows about Hans's overconfidence from learning that, and that's why he can play that gambit with the gun taped to his back. Mm-hmm. In Groundhog Day, Phil's becoming a better person. That him becoming a better person wins the love that he couldn't win just by cheating. And by winning that love, February 3rd arrives. And so you're done with your epilogue, your denouement, or what Joseph Campbell called freedom to live. In The Matrix, Neo is triumphant. He informs the machines. He and his friends will no longer play by their rules. The game belongs to him. In Die Hard, John chucks Hans out the window, cutting him loose by removing the watch given to his wife. And that watch symbolizes the company that got in between him and his wife. And Groundhog Day feels excited for the new day, excited with his new love, and excited by the prospect of embracing that which he once cynically avoided. Those, so you can see how those movies all get those steps.
Yeah.
And the point is, really, if you write a story and you follow those steps, your story can be cliche and trite as all hell, and it will still be engaging. If you don't follow those steps right, then if it's cliche, then it can be really interesting and creative and perhaps still be engaging. But if you're really trite and write poorly and don't follow those steps, you're not going to have an engaging script.
Right.
So there you go.
The script that you read from your friend, you know, was, we talked a little bit about how, you know, it didn't really develop characters or anything. Did it, you know, what was the structure? Like, what was the,
there was the basics of a three act structure, which it is not surprising because we've seen enough stories. We naturally tell enough stories that we know essentially that a story has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It had a beginning, it had a middle, it had an end. It had a very ponderous end, did not stick its landing at all. It had a very ponderous middle and a very ponderous beginning. It did not have the right beats in there, all those important beats. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it did have a point where the characters interacted, did have a point where the characters reached a low point and did have an end point. But it didn't get all the parts right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really muddled and confused. And it didn't do the important things. Like, one thing they told him is, you know, with your characters, you have to know your characters before you do any dialogue. The first thing you do is you write an outline of everything that happens without any dialogue. He kind of went dialogue first and had everything follow around the dialogue. And that's telling, not showing. And that's really bad.
Right.
You make an outline of how the story is going to be without any dialogue. Dialogue comes last. But you get your story down. And then I said also, with your characters, I don't know who any of these characters are. They're not even two-dimensional. Well, they aren't even defined. I told him to write backstories for all those characters, knowing that you'll probably use 20% of that, if that much.
But you'll know what the characters
are. It goes back to that
Joe Schmo thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm not a writer. But the thing that probably fascinates me most about fiction writing is that, you know, people who build the universe, you know, and the story, the character development, and it's, you know, you don't know where it's going. You start creating a character, you know, and, you know, it may be write a short story just about the character, but it builds up that character, right? And then you write another character. And you maybe, of course, you can revise the short story to make the, you know, put in an attribute that you need mm-hmm. in the main story or something like that. But, you know, that's really fascinating how you're not just, well, you just said it, you know, don't write the dialogue. Know how your character would react when put into this situation. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't know your character that well, then you need to work on your character.
Yeah. Have the characters be real. Have the characters have flaws. It's extremely important that your characters have flaws. Mm-hmm. They can't be perfect. They can't be perfect at what they do. An example that comes to mind is the movie Birdemic.
Birdemic.
Which is one of those. It's like it's pretty much as bad as The Room. And the main character is this guy who's great at his job, gets the girl, and is fantastic at everything he does. It's like that's boring. Not interesting at all. At least in The Room, the guy was cuckolded, right? At least in The Room, he was just a stupid idiot who couldn't see what was going on around him.
Right. No, I'm not sure the writer knew that he was a stupid idiot.
No. But he was being...
As it happens when you write yourself.
Yeah.
I'm going to make this awesome, fabulous character, and he's going to be just like me.
But that's why The Room is a classic. The reason why Room is a super classic is because it was made earnestly. The guy was trying to make a fantastic movie. He thought he had an amazing script, an amazing talent. He was the writer, director, producer. He did everything.
And star.
Yeah.
Johnny Wiseau.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great critique. You know, it was fun actually following through those stories. One question I have, I'm not familiar with, what's the name of that?
Monomyth.
The Monomyth. And I guess I kept saying someone's name.
Who Joseph Campbell.
Joseph Campbell. The titles for these sections, I mean, they probably come from like different classic meetings.
Campbell was really, he was analyzing lore in ancient texts, you know, ancient stories from the Bible, from Gilgamesh, from the Greek gods, and how all these stories mimic the stories that we tell today. Campbell's point was not, this is just like it was in Scarface. His point was, this is how we've been telling stories for 500,000 years.
Right. No, I understand that. You know, as you were going through, I'm wondering, like, you know, and the titles were, you know, somewhat generic, so they could certainly be almost equally applied to multiple things. But I'm like wondering, like, that title, like, where, what story did that title come from? You know, I was kind of trying to, you know, look through that. But I mean, he's pulling from such a wide and, you know, more than I've ever even heard of, let alone know, you know, movies and stories. So, but you know, that's what I was wondering. You're telling me the titles. I'm like, I wonder what the driving story.
The book is that you can read all about. The book is called Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Okay.
And there are other books about it, but that was his first real examination of the monomyth and the monomyth structure. And, you know, like Star Wars was George Lucas's attempt to make a Joseph Campbell-esque story. So Star Wars has those same beats in it.
Oh, sure. It absolutely does. I mean, yeah, that's probably the reason, you know, a movie with mediocre special effects, you know, was so compelling.
Yeah, you're in this strange, weird world. So if you have a likable protagonist to bring you along with it, and you follow the beats of the stories that we're all familiar with, you're gonna appreciate it. You're going to be captivated by it.
You know, this is cool. I mean, like just thinking about Star Wars, like I'm able to put names, like, or at least direction behind the different scenes now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when what's the Tusken Raiders, you know, or whoever blew up, you know, Aunt and Uncle, Uncle Ben's camp, right? You know, that's the, not the call to action, but the supernatural age. Yeah, supernatural age, yeah.
Forces him to cross the threshold. Right.
So what was Call to Action before that? That was Uncle, or that was Old Ben, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he wasn't ready to do it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Old Ben was trying to get him to go, you know, find his, you know, find his way. And he was like,
he found the hologram mm-hmm. and he found that it was Ben. And then he learned about his father and Jedi Knight and stuff like that.
Right.
But he wasn't ready to leave until the supernatural aid comes. In that case, it was, yeah, killing of his aunt and uncle.
Very cool.
Cross the first threshold.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's going to be helpful. Just watching movies, like, you know, I'm going to have to go back and you know, I think, you know, it's worth learning this a little bit more because I only remember some of, you know, distinctly remember some of what you went across, but, and I really liked how you compared to three different movies. That would have been a good podcast in its own.
Well, my point was, you know, just to tell him, look, this is bad, but that doesn't mean I don't want to help you, and that doesn't mean you can't make good stuff. Mm-hmm. I want to help, and this is why I'm going to be as helpful as I possibly can by showing you where you went wrong. And I figured that the way I could do that is by demonstrating it in three movies that are well known and are of different genres, and yet still fit this thing.
You think he's going to wrangle the story into those steps?
I think it can be done.
Cool.
Maybe like I said, there are four or five good things in there.
You'll get a credit, maybe.
I'll get a thank you.
A special thanks, yeah. Yes. Right down there with the storage company that helped with the rendering.
Hey,
is it sci-fi? Will we be rendering any special effects for it?
I don't want to talk about what the movie is.
Okay. I figured you didn't want to talk about plot too much, but yeah. Come on, genre. Give us the genre.
The genre? All right, romantic comedy.
Romantic comedy, okay. Cool. All right, let's wrap this up, drink some beer.
All right.